Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Big Ten writer on SI, Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing today?
I'm doing good, Jim. I was going to show you this. Have you ever been to the Louisville Slugger Museum?
I have not.
Well, I got this free Happy Holidays bat from when we went last year, and it's now appropriate time to break it out. So I thought I would just show you. If you ever go to the Louisville Slugger, you get a free bat. So one of these free little tiny bats. And we're both big baseball guys, so this isn't just completely random for anybody listening.
Very nice. Very nice. I'm trying to figure out when I would next time be in Louisville. But you know what? Some of those museums and so on, it's almost like you should set up a road trip to hit all of them. Louisville for the bats, the Cooperstown for Baseball Hall of Fame, Canton. What is it? In Kansas City, they have the Negro League Museum, I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, so you could hit all of those. That would be a cool road trip.
That would be a great road trip. I'm all on board with that.
All right. Well, maybe next summer off season, you and I will have to figure out how to do that. We'll plot out our the sports museums that we'll go to. That would be a lot of fun. But Dustin, as much as I'm sure our listeners want to hear about our plans to hit museums, we actually had a big breaking story here in Nittany Land. Former coach James Franklin finally made the agreement with Virginia Tech. As always, when we have this kind of news here locally, I'd like to get your perspective from the national level. James Franklin takes the job at Virginia Tech, Dustin.
I think that's it. I think it's a great fit for both parties. Number one, Virginia Tech doesn't have the same level of expectation as Penn State. So there's not going to be that pressure maybe to win the big one. Now, obviously, if you get any program to a level where you win 9 or 10 games, they always want to win the big one. But you can be very successful, as we've seen in the ACC, by going 10-2, 9-3 every season. So if he's able to get that up and running, I think after the last couple of hires that Virginia Tech has had, Justin Fuente, Brett Pry, they need some sort of revitalization of the program. And I think that James Franklin brings that level of excitement. He's going to create a buzz. He's a very good spokesperson. He'll get fans fired up about what they can do. And this is a program that's been hungry to get back to the top of the ACC. I'm not saying he's going to win it every year. I'm not saying he's going to win it ever, but I think that with his ability to recruit, and I think he will still have that ability because he's going to know that area. He obviously recruited the DMV when he was at Penn State. I just think it's a really good fit all around. And again, if you can win 9 or 10 games in the ACC, heck, you might even be able to win. Well, Duke was in the running, and they had
four losses.
They were in the running and still had a chance to get to the, get to the championship game. So there are a lot of ways that you can win in the ACC without having to battle the Ohio States, the Michigans, now the Oregons, and the USCs of the world. So I think that's a great fit.
I'm with you. I think it's the best fit for him. It was interesting. It seemed to take a little while because the conversation has been ongoing. To Virginia Tech's credit, they wanted to get it done right away. They wanted to get the new coach in the fold, start recruiting, start building your staff. So from their perspective, they were even, it appeared to be, they were getting a little irritated with James's side. I'm sure James's agent was leveraging Florida, Arkansas, Auburn, maybe talking, back channels with Florida State. Might something be happening there? And I really would love to hear, we wouldn't get the truth, but I'd love to hear what James was thinking you know, an ACC team like Virginia Tech versus coaching in the Southeast Conference, Dustin?
I would think, because I think a lot of people thought Arkansas was in play for that job and the success that he had in Vanderbilt. I would think job security would be a big deal. And when you look at what, when you look at what he, how quickly Arkansas has gone through coaches, I think that that's probably a little bit of a detractor because he doesn't want to, you're going to face pressure when you're a high level coach in any conference. But I think there's also going to be a leniency at Virginia Tech that he probably wouldn't be granted at Arkansas. And I know that they gave Sam Pittman a long leash, but Chad Morris was run out of town pretty quickly. Brett Bielema got Arkansas to a couple bowl games, and then eventually he, you know, wore out his welcome. So I think that there's – I mean, I know Virginia Tech has gone through coaches pretty quickly too, but I just feel like when you look at the ACC – I think if you're a coach, you can say, yeah, I can win this league and I don't have to play Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, Ole Miss, LSU, some of those other big name programs that he would have to play at Arkansas. So if you want to say it's the easy way out, that's fine. But I think he also knows he's going to face a lot less pressure and maybe get a little bit more control of the Virginia Tech program than maybe he would have at an Arkansas or one of those other job openings.
I agree. You mentioned early on in the Big Ten, he'd have to go through Ohio State, Michigan, Oregon, now USC. You didn't mention Indiana also.
I know.
I'm just going to let it slide. But, you know, in the Southeast Conference, it's even more so if you're at Auburn, Arkansas, maybe even Florida. You know, you and I think of the Urban Meyer years there. But Florida is no longer that team. So you have to go through a lot more. I think the path is a lot easier at Virginia Tech to, you know, a 10-win season, a potential ACC championship, which means getting to the playoffs. Now, let me ask you a question that my nephew sent to me, and I'll present it to you. I like the question. He asked, who will win a playoff game first, James Franklin at Virginia Tech or Penn State? So I'm going to add the second part to the question. So I'll make it two part. Which one will make the playoffs first and which one will win a playoff game first?
Oh, man. I would really like to answer this question if Penn State had its coach named. Man, that's tough. My gut says James Franklin, partly because it's skewed because I don't know who's going to be the leader at Penn State. And that would change, maybe it could change drastically what my opinion is. But then also, if you're not in the top two of the ACC, you really don't have a chance. All you got to, if you're in the top four of the Big Ten, probably more years than not. Now, maybe not this year, but if you're in the top four of the Big Ten, you're going to give yourself a chance. God, that is a great question. I think James will get into the playoff first. Who will win a playoff game? I'll say Penn State on that one. So I'll split down the middle.
You know, that was my initial reaction too. In fact, it's exactly how I reacted. I answered it, you know, on text. James will make the playoffs first. Penn State will win a playoff game first. But believe it or not, you just may have talked me out of that, Dustin. Let me explain it. Yeah, how about you? Didn't even realize the influence.
You were like, Dustin's thinking that way. I got to change my opinion.
No, that's not the way it is. Let me explain. You mentioned, you know, in the Big Ten, you win 10 games, get into the top four, you're in the playoffs. And again, I can't help myself. I keep looking at Penn State's schedule next year. They don't play Oregon. They don't play Ohio State. They don't play Indiana. The games that are the testers are they're at Michigan, and I believe they're home to USC. That screams 10 wins. Yeah. Now, I understand, you know, a team coming off losses to Northwestern and UCLA and Iowa probably shouldn't be talking 10 wins, but this is Penn State. And if they, you know, put together a team, a respectable team next year, 10 wins is very realistic, Dustin. So, you know, 10 wins in the Big Ten doesn't guarantee, but it comes pretty close to guaranteeing you get in. We're going to be talking about that a little later in the show when we talk about the playoffs. But in the ACC, you know, does 10 wins get you there if you don't win the ACC championship game?
Yeah, it probably depends on what those 10 wins look like and what your two losses look like. Like if you lose to Boston College and Syracuse, probably not. You're probably not getting in. But if you have losses, you know, to teams in the top tier of the ACC, let's say I'm just going to throw out Louisville and Miami, and maybe you're able to get a good win here or there, then maybe you're still in the conversation. But the pressure is on to win the ACC championship. I mean, that's why the competition level isn't as high, but the margin for error is slimmer, I would say. Whereas it's the opposite in the Big Ten. You don't have a very wide margin for error if you want to make the playoff, but if you're playing, you know, Ohio, as we saw, you know, in the past, if you get to 10 wins, you probably put yourself in a pretty good spot to get into the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, you want to win the ACC. That's the only guaranteed spot. I don't think that 10 wins is going to guarantee you in the ACC, but I don't know. It probably just depends on the year. Like this year with the Big Ten, the way it is, it might.
Well, I think if Penn State puts together a respectable team, and I truly believe they want to, they're not looking for a 3 or 4 year rebuild. Okay. I believe they want to win next year. And off the top of my head, looking at that schedule, I would not be surprised if Penn State is favored in 10 out of 12 games next season, Dustin.
Sure.
And yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. And it's just a matter of who – I think the only reason I'm hesitant is because I want to know who's coaching, and then you obviously want to know what they're going to bring in via the transfer portal or what – recruiting at the high school level is probably going to be pretty difficult at this point, but what do they bring in via the transfer portal and what does your roster look like before I'm ready to say they'll make the playoff before Virginia Tech?
All right, Dustin, that's the last word for quarter number one. We're going to keep up this coaching talk, maybe take a look at that Penn State coaching opening when we come back after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking about James Franklin moving on from Penn State. I had this thought as you were talking about you know, his schedule at Virginia Tech, who his wins and losses are against. Remember, this is a guy who this past year at Penn State scheduled Villanova, Florida International, and Nevada as his out-of-conference games. So
yes,
what's comparable for Virginia Tech then out-of-conference schedule? I wonder what that will look like.
I can tell you right now, I've got it up. They will play Virginia Military Institute. They will play Old Dominion. They'll play James Madison. And they will play at Maryland. And you're going to get September Maryland. So that's like a juggernaut. October.
Well, I think that Madison game may be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, even Old Dominion at the beginning of the season, Old Dominion gave Indiana a bit of a run. And that would be a matchup of offensive coordinator head coach because Ricky Ronnie is still there, I believe.
Well, what's fun about this changeover all of a sudden for Virginia Tech, I've been getting hit with Virginia Tech angled articles. Yep. So they're already talking about bringing Brent Pry back as defensive coordinator. Might he be able to get Ricky Ronnie to come be his offensive coordinator? Not going to happen. And, I don't think Brent Pry nor Virginia Tech is actually ready for this quick a reunion. Especially, and one thing I do want to hit with Virginia Tech, which is I hear a lot of discussions about James Franklin going to Virginia Tech. He'll be the difference maker. And he will be. It's a much bigger name. It will help with recruiting. But let me tell you, Dustin, what's going to really help the recruiting? They increased their football budget by $40 million for this coming year. That, my friend, is going to make the difference.
That's the James Franklin special right there. Yeah. Well, That will make a difference. I was going to say the problem I have with, and I think James is a very good coach, and I know you do too, but as high as I am on this, there's a reluctancy to me to be like, well, this is for sure going to work. Because how many coaches have we thought would work at certain places and it just didn't? It just didn't pan out. And so there's always that risk. There's always that possibility that for whatever reason, maybe it's not a good fit. Now, I think it will be. But I'm not ready to say that Virginia Tech's going to be a power team in the ACC every single year. I think they can do that kind of like he did in the Big Ten, right? Like they were consistently 9 or 10 win teams. And then twice they won the Big Ten in 2016, and then they got to the Big Ten championship game last year. I think that that's probably more likely of what you'd see out of Virginia. I think it's going to be the same. But at Virginia Tech, I would feel like that would be more acceptable than it would be at Penn State.
I think so too. They've been down so long that, and as I said, the financial resources, it's not just tangibly, hey, we've got more money for NIL and those things and coaches and so on, but it's also an indicator that the administration is saying we want to win. That's a big part of this. Now, will it be enough to satisfy James? Probably not. Okay, going by history.
Right.
And I can't wait for his first 10-win year, and he'll try to leverage it into an extension and more something. But, let's quickly take a look, though, at what effect this has on Penn State, both positive and negative. The positive is by him getting this coaching job, the Virginia Tech, the way his contract was set up, him getting another coaching job would mitigate what Penn State owes him. Mm-hmm. Now, there can be some games played. Well, hey, does Virginia Tech have to pay him much money because he's already getting $50 million from Penn State? Well, I think there's wording in it that it's got to be a legitimate offer. And what I don't know if you heard this part, Penn State and James Franklin apparently negotiated it to a $9 million payment.
I did hear that, yes.
And, that's certainly a lot better than $50 million, approximately $41 million better. And that's right. Money that they could commit otherwise. So I think that's a big help to them. I think the downside to this, though, is who will James Franklin take with him as far as players in the portal? Will he take any of the coaches from Penn State with him? I got to imagine yes. And also, how about the next recruiting class? Because as you pointed out, James has recruited the DMV for so many years. And remember that prior to Penn State, he also had a coaching stint at Maryland.
Right. So he has some connections there. And that's going to be the interesting thing. That's why I think Virginia Tech could be, if you want to say, turned around quicker, because he probably will get some of those coaches. The other thing that I'm interested to see what happens at Virginia Tech with him is he had a tendency to run through offensive coordinators and sometimes position, particularly wide receiver coaches, pretty quickly. They had a pretty short leash. I know Ronnie was there for a while. I know Joe Moorhead was there for 2 years. at Vanderbilt, I feel like, and I'd have to go back and look, he kept his staff pretty well in check for those 3 years that he was there. And so it makes me wonder, do you feel the pressure when you're at Penn State to figure out a way to win immediately, whereas maybe at Virginia Tech, you can kind of keep that staff continuity? Now, assuming if people move on for their own sake and other jobs, that's one thing. But if you have to constantly move on from assistant coaches or coordinators or whatever, maybe he felt that pressure, and maybe that's something he doesn't feel like he has to do at Virginia Tech. I don't know. I don't know James personally. I don't know what his mindset is. I don't know if that was him moving on or if there was some nudging from Penn State to say, hey, we don't think Kirk Schrock is the guy. We don't think Mike Yurcich is, whatever the case might be. I don't know. Maybe they were just bad hires on his part. But I feel like at Virginia Tech, if he wants to stick with a particular assistant coordinator, he will have that leash. Whether or not he tends to use it, I don't know.
Well, I think James's tendency is towards loyalty. And early on in his tenure at Penn State, he would remain loyal to his guys. What then happened, I think he reached the point, hey, look, I've got to take that next step, and I got to treat the coaching staff that same way. It's got to be. So, a lot of the guys were there a long time. Terry Smith was there for a very long time. Juwan Sider, until he made the move to Notre Dame, he had been there a long time. I believe that's his desire, but at wide receiver and at coordinator, now at defensive coordinator, they were moving on their own. Brett Pry moved on, Manny Diaz moved on. But that leads us, we could use this as a good segue. It's interesting. No real word is coming out on the Penn State coaching search. It's all rumors. Who has heard something? Very little is coming out of the building to give us an indicator. But every week, Brian Hartline was the hot name a couple of weeks ago. Eli Drinkwitz has been recently. Now I'm sensing it from the fans. They get one win. All of a sudden, people are on Terry Smith and saying, why not? What do you think, Dustin? Staying in town.
I don't like it. And I'm sure Terry Smith is a good dude, and I'm sure he's a good – what was he position coach-wise before he was
cornerback.
Cornerback, yeah. So Michigan State tried this with Harlan Barnett a few years ago, and it doesn't usually work. Like, you have to have some head coaching experience. Doesn't matter how long you've been on staff. Doesn't matter how long you've been with the program or know the program. You have to have a level of head coaching experience for these type of jobs. Now, if this was like Akron or Toledo, then yeah, by all means, give that guy a shot. But you moved on from a guy who couldn't win the big game, and now you're going to hire somebody with no head coaching experience, a position coach. That's not going to work. I can promise you Penn State would regret that within 6 months. And again, it sounds like I'm bashing him, but just that plan very rarely works. And so don't go down that path if you're trying to win a national championship.
Well, I think where the Penn State-ers, the fans, who have begun to talk, he's one of us. He's a Penn Stater through and through. He played at Penn State. He bleeds blue and white. To him, it's all, success with honor. Every Penn State fan who longs for the old days, Terry Smith would be the closest thing to that. And after a half a season of very lackadaisical effort, seeing this team actually play a game and acting like they gave a damn about the outcome was kind of refreshing. Now, that could all come crashing down with a loss this weekend to Nebraska, but that's what the Penn State fans are seeing. I think for the reasons that you expressed, Dustin, and also I believe that Pat Kraft, the athletic director, has cornered himself and having to make a big-time hire. It may be just about winning the press conference, but I'm not sure – introducing Terry Smith as your next head coach at Penn State is winning the press conference.
No, I don't think so. You're not, I mean, again, if you have, you're training somebody for a big time job who has no experience, like that's the problem. And I understand people always want, maybe not always, but a lot of people want alums or people who played there to coach, but it doesn't always work out quite that way. There's certain circumstances where it has. And so I get it. What I would do, sometimes what I've seen in the past, and I don't know that this comes from the athletic director or what, but there sometimes is a sense of like, hey, we're going to hire you. Here's our one request, though. You keep Terry Smith on staff. And I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happened, because you want you do want somebody who loves Penn State, who knows, has experience in the Big Ten, knows what it takes to win with that program. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was, whether that coach wanted to keep him aboard or not. You've seen situations where a new staff comes in and it's like, we got to have this guy because he's been here a long time. He knows what it takes. He can help us, show us the ropes. He's just not going to be a good fit as a head coach. Again, if you wanted to start, if this was a lower level program, or maybe even a lower, like let's say Illinois, right? And you want to give that guy a shot and say, hey, we don't like any of these coaches. We're going to give him a 1-year interim type situation and see how he performs. And you want to do that? Great. But you can't move on from a guy who, would win a couple games to try to appease a fan base.
All right, that's it for quarter number two. Lots more to go when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We were talking coaching openings. How about we actually get back to football and get on the field? A little bit of an interesting past week in the Big Ten, Dustin. I think the biggest game. Iowa gave USC all they could handle out there in L.A., but USC 26-21. That keeps their playoff hopes alive.
Yeah, absolutely, because that's a ranked win for them, able to stay alive. And they were down, 21-7 in that first half or something like that. And so for them to come back and get a home win in some ugly conditions, I think was big for them. And then, look, they've got a huge game this week against Oregon. And this could be a playoff. I mean, essentially a play-in playoff game. And USC, if they win, they're not going to be burdened with having to play in the Big Ten championship game. They can kick their feet up and rest, because I do think the winner of this game, I believe, is going to be the third Big Ten team that gets a bid. Now, the loser, if Oregon loses, maybe they still have a shot, maybe. But I would say the winner of USC-Oregon, barring a disaster in the final week of the season, is going to be the third team in the playoff for the Big Ten this year. So that's a huge game. And after they lost to Illinois, a lot of people were saying, oh, here we go again, another 7-5 season incoming. So the fact that, Lincoln Riley's been able to kind of salvage this season and have USC playing for a playoff spot with just 2 weeks to go, pretty good coaching job by him this season.
Yes, they are back to being relevant. And we'll get to that playoff picture in the fourth quarter, Dustin. And we'll dig a little deeper into it. Some of the other games, Ohio State blew out UCLA as expected. Oregon, they kept going, blew out Minnesota. Minnesota, they're the same every year. They win 8 games. They hope to win 9 games, and that seems to be it. The other one, Indiana, they won big over Wisconsin. But one question there is, how does Luke Fickell keep his job?
I don't know. I don't know how they beat Washington a few weeks ago, but my guess would be their athletic director is probably pretty reluctant to move on because he is very bullheaded and was the one who fired Paul Christ. And so you want this guy to work out. So there, I think there's two things at work here. One, he doesn't want to look like an idiot, which he already kind of does. Sorry. The other thing is, I don't know if they have a coach in mind that they think would come in and immediately is immediately their next guy. And so do you just wait and say, we're going to give Fickell one more year and see what the next year's coaching cycle looks like? Do you just wait to the season ends and name somebody else? I don't know. Yeah, if like that, there's no signs of hope right now for Wisconsin. And I understand their schedule was difficult, so maybe they're building in some grace here, but it's not like they were, you know, I think back to like, even when Wisconsin wasn't winning some of those bigger games, they were at least competitive under Paul Christ. These are not even competitive games.
No, they're not. And I'm wondering too, you make a coaching change now in the pecking order of available jobs. Where is the Wisconsin job? 8th, 9th, mm-hmm. 10th by the time we roll this out, it'll be slim pickings for them. Michigan survived Northwestern 24-22. That keeps them in the fold. Yep. Next week, you'll be saying the same thing about Michigan playing Ohio State. For them, that may be a play-in game. The game relevant to, you know, so much of our audience is the Penn State-Michigan State game. I'm not sure how much of you you saw, and we're talking about how many Penn State fans are now talking Terry Smith as the coach full-time is their desire. But if you watch this game, as I mentioned earlier, this was the first time all season, Dustin, that we saw a Penn State team that seemed to care. And where I think it's really relevant is this was easily the best effort by the offensive line. And in the second half, again, I know it's Michigan State, but Penn State just pushed their will upon Michigan State's defense. And when the game's on the line, you know, one score difference, Penn State ground out, literally grounded out a 9-minute drive. And the only pass completion was the touchdown, which was the little shuttle pass. It was essentially a running play. So they instilled their will on Michigan State. My question to you is, how much are you buying in on this Penn State team after that win?
I mean, I think it's good that they got a win and probably got some confidence after they dropped that game to Indiana, because that's a heartbreaker. That's one where you say we were so close and the season hasn't gone, but maybe if you win that game, you rally around it. So I think it's impressive that they were able to bounce back the next week and get a win. This was also still just a 4-point game late in the fourth quarter. So it's not like they rolled out, went up 28-0 and kind of cruised the rest of the game. They did, as you mentioned, they had to grind it out. I mean, I think it is, I don't know if inspiring is the right word to say, but to get your guys ready and to have them playing a game that they're probably not too interested in at this point in the season with the record when they were and entered that game at 3-6, they don't really have another, big time showdown on the schedule. So, I mean, I think it's a good sign that you're able to win. I don't know how much I'm putting, because it wasn't like they come out and flex their muscle and dominated from opening kickoff. It was a pretty tight game until midway through the fourth, late in the fourth, really.
Yeah, I think what Penn State fans are hanging their hat on is the start was disastrous. It was a 3-and-out for Penn State. Michigan State, one play from scrimmage, touchdown. It's 7-0, you know, before many people got to their seats. And it's like, uh-oh, here we go again. And they showed some character with the comeback. All right. I'm going to use that, though, as the segue going forward to this week's games, where Penn State hosts Nebraska. It's actually going to be a night game on the schedule, which is interesting, not what we expected out here. But I suspect you've seen the spread for this game, Dustin.
Or have you not? I actually have not.
I'm great. That's fantastic. Give me your spread for this game.
I would guess. Oh boy, because you got to factor in the backup quarterback. I'm going to say Nebraska 3.5.
You have Nebraska favored by 3.5.
That's my guess as to what the spread is. Yes.
All right, Nebraska the favorite by 3.5. How about Penn State favored by 9.5?
Holy cow. I about said a word I can't say on radio.
Do you know what? I sensed it coming. I have, by the way, I have a new sound effect, a beep, you know, beep out the bleep. So I was anticipating I might need it. 9.5 points. In fact, I saw initially somewhere 10.5 points. Can you believe
wow.
that?
Wow. No, I cannot. I can understand why it would be a close spread. I would even understand a Penn State being favored in this game, but 10 points, that's wow. I did not expect that. That thought it was Thanksgiving coming up, Jim, not April Fools.
I was stunned by it also. I mean, this is your, you know, what is it, 7-3 Nebraska Cornhuskers versus your 4-6 Nittany Lions. And all I could think of is, and this is the positive spin from Penn State fans. Finally, those first 9 games were not who they are. We finally saw who they are in this game, and it's going to be, there will be whiteout energy for this game as a night game, last home game, it's senior night, all of that, a lot of emotion. But boy, I didn't see that spread coming either.
Yeah, that's a surprise of the day, probably of the week. Yeah, I mean, I do think it's going to be a better game because, again, Nebraska's got a backup quarterback too. So it's not, you know, they're also not at full strength. This could be a really fun old school football game because you've got really good running backs all over the field in this game. So,
and inexperienced quarterbacks.
Yeah. So maybe we'll see 25 total passes and just 1,000 runs. And it'll be like playing in 1984.
Well, Penn State, and this is coming from someone who has been pleading and begging with them to throw the ball down the field some. And I was actually pleased with the play calling in the second half when they threw a total of 2 passes, one of which was actually pretty much more a running play than anything. But they were successful running. They ran wide a little bit, which they hadn't been doing. And they were successful, so they kept with it. So I had no problem with it, but you're right. The offensive line, are they now feeling their oats? And
yeah.
if they could grind it out, they will. Leads me to have the other big game, as you mentioned earlier, it's USC at Oregon. I think it's a great matchup. Did you see the point spread for this game?
No, I have not seen any point spreads. So I'm green here.
I love that, Dustin, because we could play games then. So your point spread for USC at Oregon.
Mine would be Oregon 7.5.
Not too bad. It's actually 10.5, okay. Which is more than I thought it would be. I thought it would stay, you know, like 8 or 9 points.
Sure.
But yeah, it's up to 10.5. USC have a shot at this one.
Yes, I think they do. I don't think Oregon is quite as good as they have been in the past. The question is, can USC, because when they've gotten in some of these big-time games on the road, they've fallen short. So can they kind of reverse course here? And again, they just come off an emotional win last week. I'm trying to – Oregon. Oh, yeah, Oregon had an extra day to prepare, so that helps them.
Yeah.
I don't think USC is going to win, but I do think it's going to be – I think it's going to be within a touchdown for most of the game.
I have them covering the spread is my thought. That was a little bit rich, 10.5 points. But, you know, it will be also chaos if USC can win this game. And, Dustin, I know you're ready to react to that. I'm going to give you that chance when we come back. We're going to look at the whole national picture, the whole playoff picture. because it's kind of coming into shape, and we're going to be able to ask some of those questions. Gee, how many teams from the Southeast Conference? We'll get Dustin's answer when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. As promised, we're going to talk the playoff picture, Dustin. And, you know, last year, the first year of the 12-team playoff, I think we were a little bit not sure how to think about it. And I think we're a little bit better prepared this season than last year. But my first thought on this, and this is in preparing myself, I do another show where we look at the game, upcoming games, and make our picks against the spread. And all of a sudden, there were not that many interesting games this year or this week. And if you want to know why, look at that Southeast Conference schedule. This is their let's play podunk this week. you know, and this is their eight games instead of nine. So instead of playing each other, they're playing, you know, whoever. So it really changes things. But it gives a pretty clear picture of the Southeast Conference. And let's start there, Dustin. I think Texas A&M, Georgia, Ole Miss, Alabama, even after their loss last week, I think those four teams are all in real good shape to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think Texas A&M avoided a scare. That was wild.
Incredible
what we saw
comeback
in College Station. Yeah. Yeah. I think, and Georgia now 9-1. And I think I don't even know. Do they have a conference game left? Hold on. Let me check their schedule really quick.
I don't think so. But they put,
yeah.
And then they play Georgia Tech though, which could be a fun game.
Yeah. It was last year and it could very much be this year again. Yeah. I would say probably as close to locks as you can get because, I mean, Alabama was the one question. They got Eastern Illinois and Auburn at the end of the season. So maybe they trip up against Auburn, but Auburn's pretty bad. So, but I mean, there's also the possibility that you, did you say Texas A&M, Georgia, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, and Alabama?
No, I had Alabama. I think Oklahoma, they still have Missouri left on their schedule. And
LSU.
Is LSU. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I don't think either one of those is a walkover. Now, I know Missouri's, you know, hurting at quarterback, and I think Oklahoma will be favored in both those games. But, you know, it's not Eastern Kentucky that they're playing.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, if Oklahoma wins that, I think that they're probably in the mix too. Ole Miss is probably sitting in the best spot because they – are 10-1, they don't have to play, and then they play Mississippi State in the Egg Bowl. So I mean, Texas A&M is in the best spot because they're undefeated. But, yeah, I mean, Texas A&M and Ole Miss are probably the two teams that are sitting the prettiest because you could still have Georgia lose a game. And if they lose the big SEC championship, maybe they go 9-3. So, or I'm sorry, 10-3. So do they get in there? I don't know. But I'm feeling pretty good if I'm Texas A&M and Ole Miss right now.
Yeah, and I don't think Georgia will lose to Georgia Tech. So I think the four, and I think Vanderbilt needs Oklahoma to stumble, mm-hmm. and Vanderbilt has to beat Tennessee,
yeah,
to get to 10-2. And so I think like A&M, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Alabama in, and then Vanderbilt and Oklahoma. Oklahoma, if they win out, I think they're the fifth team. I don't think they'll take six teams. I think Vanderbilt needs Oklahoma to lose. Big Ten picture, Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon will be a question mark. If they lose to USC, USC is probably the team that's in. Let's say for argument, Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon, Michigan has to beat Ohio State, USC has to beat Oregon for either one of those two teams to be considered.
Yeah. Michigan has to beat Ohio State. There's no other way around it. They don't really have the great, win on their resume, I would say. They lost to Oklahoma earlier this season. And then they lost. They got run out. I mean, USC took it to them, right?
Yeah.
So that's – Michigan's going to have to beat Ohio State. Oregon, they have – their final two games are pretty difficult. USC, and then they play a Washington team at Washington. I know Washington's lost some games this season, but that's still a – especially in Seattle, that's – frisky team? I don't know how to put that. Feisty. Maybe feisty.
Feisty is better. I like feisty. Yeah, better than frisky, Justin.
But it's,
frisky has a couple other connotations.
Yeah, it does. You know what? It's early in the morning. I haven't had enough coffee yet to my descriptive words. So, yeah, I think, if USC wins this week, they're in, because they're not, I don't think they're going to lose to USC or UCLA, excuse me. So there's a lot of, I think there's a lot more fun scenarios, but Ohio State and Indiana have already punched their ticket.
Well, the interesting thing would be if USC beats Oregon, and let's still project Oregon then beating Washington, you have both USC and Oregon with two losses. I can't picture them both making it.
Which is crazy to say about the Big Ten. Right?
Yes. Because
if it was the SEC, there's no question.
But my goodness, if USC beats Oregon and Michigan beats Ohio State, now you've got chaos.
Yeah, that could make for some interesting fodder. But I think what's going to happen, Jim, and I'm going to prepare people for this in the event that it happens, right? This is like those old bomb videos that they used to have to show you, and where you'd hide under your desk, which was basically just kindling, right? If the nuclear war breaks out while you're sitting in school, just hide under your desk and you'll be protected. If there's that kind of chaos, everybody's going to say the Big Ten is not that good and they should only get two teams in. I'm just telling you right now how that's going to go down.
Oh, whereas the same kind of chaos in the Southeast Conference will tell you they're all good.
Yes, correct.
And perhaps the biggest end result of that chaos will be Tony Petitti racing to the negotiating table to try and make a 16-team playoff.
Did you hear about, the Big Ten is still legitimately pushing 24 teams. I thought this was a play to try to get the SEC to say, okay, you're ridiculous. We'll talk about the 16-team playoff and we'll talk about the auto bid situation and we'll get that sorted out. Nope. Petitti has gone back and they presented a 24-game playoff. Every power conference, 4 automatic bids, 2 group of 5 bids, and then 4 at large. I can't remember I don't know math very well. 16, 18, maybe 6 at large. Maybe 6. It might have been 6 at large bids, but that's now we're talking crazy if we're getting to that point.
Well, the sad part is it's become less about the games, and I always hesitate to use the word fair, more like reasonable, but it's no longer about those things, Dustin. It's about money. And, a lot of people got to get their paychecks, but these schools were not prepared for not just the $20 million that they're handing over to their athletes, but now $10 to $15 million for a coach if you're going to compete in those wars, and a $3 million coordinator, and how about, 78 analysts on your staff, and it goes on and on. They've got to milk everything for every last dime they get, because of the monster that they created. And it's interesting, you know, we're talking about the Big Ten picture, the Southeast Conference picture, but you get to the ACC and Big 12, they're down to they're one playoff team, right? The only argument I could say beyond it is if Texas Tech somehow lost to, say, BYU in a conference championship game, would a currently sixth-ranked Texas Tech have an argument? Because, you know, when we saw it last year from the committee, they tried really hard not to punish teams for losing in a conference championship game.
Yeah, I think in that scenario, you'd probably have a Texas Tech, you probably have two teams from the Big 12 if you had that scenario, especially because BYU at that stage would have avenged their only loss of the season.
Yeah.
So I would put, I think both of those teams would get in at that point. And I would agree with it. If that was the scenario you painted, I wouldn't have any problem with that.
Well, and before we lock BYU into that conference championship game, they do have to play at Cincinnati.
Yeah, and so there's no guarantees there either.
Yeah, there's not. The ACC, it is chaos there. Georgia Tech, Virginia, Pitt, and SMU, if I have it correct, all have one conference loss. Pitt does play Georgia Tech, so that will eliminate – one of them, I'm assuming Pitt, but you're still going to have, you know, three teams. Two of the three will make the conference championship game. One of them will come out the winner and probably be the only ACC team to make it.
Yeah, that would be my guess. And I mean, you look like, yeah, Georgia Tech's still going to have to play, even though they don't play, they'll have to play Georgia. So that's going to go to their overall losses. Virginia plays Virginia. Like, Virginia's kind of the sleeper in all this, right? A little bit, if they were to win. They've kind of flown under the radar. But, yeah, this is basically like the Big 12 was last year. So I expect the ACC is probably going to just be a one-bid league.
Yeah, if every one of those teams has at least two losses, except for Georgia Tech, and as you pointed out, they have to play Georgia. And, again, shouldn't assume, but – you know, let's give them a loss there. That would mean everybody has two losses going into a conference championship game. Pitt, like I said, you know, Pat Narduzzi said he didn't care if he lost to Notre Dame. Well, he got his wish. But between Pitt and SMU, you know, they're currently three loss teams who, if they could sneak into the conference championship games, I don't know what their tiebreaker looks like. But what this looks like overall is a one bid conference. So it'll be interesting, Dustin, once we see you and I think we both like chaos. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens if we actually get that with a couple of the upsets. All right, Dustin, thank you very much. It's been an interesting show. A lot of it spent talking coaches and new coaches. I got a feeling that conversation's not going to end. But today's show is going to end. That's it. Thank you, Dustin. Thank all of you. Make sure you join us again next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.